And our business is down about 30% for September.
Wow.
And that's a big hit.
That's huge.
Yep. And I think it's maybe not going to come back as fast as we would like it to. It's just going to have a tremendous effect for quite a time, I'm afraid.
How long do you think it way into next year?
I don't know. I think that with the, I think in the major cities where you have the potential of some sort of a terrorist attack happening, it will continue to scare people from doing some of the normal activities that they do. If we have a couple more incidents throughout the United States, particularly outside of the big cities, I think it'll affect everybody even more. Time will tell. I mean, none of us have really experienced this before. I think there's definitely going to be, you know, watching of the purse strings, the canceling of vacations, particularly outside of the country. In some ways, maybe it'll help domestic travel over the next couple of years because people are not going to go outside the United States. There's going to be advised not to. The president or somebody said recently, you know, be prepared that we can see hostage situations, kidnappings, and assassinations by people against Americans just for being American overseas. That's pretty scary.
Well, I talked to, I just, I mentioned you have, I talked to Rufus Pritchard in Nags Head a little earlier today. He said actually he's up, but he thinks it's because people are just, they're not traveling to Europe, so they drive down to the beach and, you know, that becomes a substitute.
I think that very well could happen. I mean, I think there'll be, we don't know exactly what it's going to be and how it's going to be. And I'm surprised that he's up short term at all because, you know, it seems to everybody is glued to the TVs watching them as to what's going on. And particularly during that first week after the 11th, did you have just an awful lot of inactivity and lack of spending and retail in general?
I mean, I'll admit I was a CNN couch potato that week.
Sure. I think everybody is.
What I'm a little concerned about is that, you know, the typically December through February, March is my season. That's when, you know, I make my nut and I also make my profit. And, you know, I've been, you know, obviously waiting for that all year to come around. And I'm wondering if it's going to have a major effect on my Christmas holiday bookings.
We certainly are hearing that. People are saying that they're not going to have Christmas parties this year. They're cutting back on that kind of activity because the economy has not been good to the businesses in Cleveland, and this gives them the final reason to, you know, cut back on some of those extra things. And I think we're going to see that without a question. How much? I don't know.
What's happening for you, Edmund? Because your situation in Greenville's, you don't have the city aspect to it.
No, but you know, we certainly the travel that comes to Greenville, you know, for business, you know, was killed for a couple of weeks, and which affected, you know, 80% of my midweek business is you know, expense account dining. And that certainly, you know, hurt. I mean, we were doing 25% of what we would normally do to, you know, Monday through Thursday for 2 weeks. It really, really put a hurting on me.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned a lot of what you do, a major part of your marketing is to the hotels.
Right.
And, you know, I have been working. There are probably in my neighborhood of about 2 miles, there's probably about 7 hotels that I visit on a regular basis, weekly, taking them some type of entree. Mm-hmm. 2 or 3 of them, depending on the week, I take one or two little food trays for their manager receptions. You know, we have our card in their little hotel. They have one of these little boxes that has, you know, 10 or 15 little hotel cards,
right,
that we give away, a little complimentary dessert. And also for these 7 hotels, I've come up with a card. You know, we were in a conversation with Barry Cohen 2 months ago here on the same program, and we came up with a little program that's, you know, treat your, you know, that basically the hotel staff, looks like the hotel staff is treating the guests to a free round of drinks.
Right.
Obviously, we're picking that up, but puts their name on it and the hotel name, and then the next day or the day after, I go to that hotel and give that person a $5 Circuit City buck per card I get in. And haven't done this for a while, at least for 2 months now, but we've been taking food to these seven hotels for the last 3 years. And I sit there and I measure it, you know, by how many Circuit City bucks I'm giving away. Mm-hmm. And I've got about two or three people in about three of the hotels on the program. You know, no matter how much every Tuesday I show up with some free food and I talk up this particular program, hey, guys, you know, this is the way, you know, if you're going to send me some business, you know, please do it this way. You know, it's a win-win kind of thing. It makes you look great, but it looks like you're buying them around the drinks. And also, it allows me to keep track of how much business you're sending me, mm-hmm. and so that I can reward you with these Circuit City things.
Right.
And for the two or three people who bought on and climbed on the boat, you know, I mean, I took one lady $50 worth of Circuit City certificates last week.
Right.
But I can't seem to get any of the, you know, I can't seem to get a lot of the other hotel people excited about it, or at least they're not sending me the business.
Right. I don't know what to tell you. It sounds like you're doing a great job. It's similar sorts of things we've tried with some success and some not. The only other thing I can say is that, and you probably do this anyways, you have them come directly to your restaurant. You buy them dinner. You get them enthused about your quality and your atmosphere, and that for a certain segment of the people staying in that hotel, you're going to be the place that they want to send people. But obviously, everybody going to the hotel isn't your market, whatever your market is.
Right, right.
So you have to try to target hotels that more cater to the people you think that might be your customer. But
mm-hmm.
Boy, you're doing a lot of right things. I think that one of the healthiest ones that you're doing is that a payback directly to the person who sends you business. I think as long as you make sure that you, you know, following through on that, you've got a good deal going. I don't know how else you could do it.
Right. But, and my question now is, I say, okay, you know, I've been taking food every Tuesday, and, you know, I do it personally for 3 years now. And I go in there, and I spend some time. I talk the place up. I hand out certificates for free dinners to people, you know, so forth, people who are interested to come in and try this out, so forth, so on. And my question is do I continue to do that on the two or three of those seven hotels that just aren't bringing me anything? Or do I, you know, say, hey, you know, I've watered this garden forever now. I haven't gotten any results. You know, let's just save my time and my money and forget it. Or, you know, do I continue to do it in the hopes of that sooner or later I come across somebody in one of these hotels that are not coming through that are similar to one or two of the guys that are coming through? That, you know, it may be, you know, it could be next month or 2 months from now, or maybe a year from now before I can, you know, get somebody who's really buying into the program. Would I just say, hey, man, I'm putting a lot of time and money into this and I'm not getting anything out of it?
Yeah. Those are hard decisions. I don't have an answer for you. I think one of the things you might try, you're really working at this very well, is maybe you develop some sort of a hotel input dinner that you do. And you invite, say, a couple, one person or a couple, or them, their spouse, their girlfriend, boyfriend, or whatever, to come dine with you and your wife, if you have a wife.
Right, right, I did.
And come sit down with them and say, people from three hotels. And so it gives them a chance to network about their hotel. You have some specific agenda that you're trying to do. You know, find out from them, be real blunt. Where do you send? Do you get an opportunity to send people? Where do you send them and why? And what could I do to make my place more appealing to you to do that?
Right, right, right.
That takes a little guts because you may not like what exactly they're going to say, but
mm-hmm.
it could really give you some valuable information as to how you might do a better job. Or maybe there's no hope. They don't recommend or whatever.
Oops.
Right.
Did we just lose somebody?
No, I'm still here.
No, we had somebody that came on while you were talking. And I think they just left. Okay.
Got to jump in there, huh?
Yeah.
But that would be one of my suggestions. And you're putting so much time and energy and money into it now, it can't hurt to do something like that.
Right.
And if you posed it as a hotel networking seminar or
mm-hmm.
something.
The other thing. Who just joined us?
Hello.
Who's
that?
This is Rufus.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, we've been talking about you.
Yes, Ray, how are you?
Hap, how are you doing?
Great. How's things in Carolinas?
Oh, we've had a nice time down here. The weather has been good to us.
Excellent. And your golf game is good?
It's hanging in. It's always looking for a little improvement. How about you?
Mine is barely passable. But I'm spending more time at it, quite honestly, and I hope it will continue to improve a little.
Now that you're becoming a gentleman of leisure.
That's right, gentleman of leisure.
We've been talking. We've got Edmund Wu on here, too, from Greenville.
How you doing, Rufus?
I'm fine. How you doing?
I don't know if you guys... Did you guys ever meet?
No, never have.
I don't remember. I know you know, I think you're at different sessions that we did at one time or another. But we were talking about, Edmund's got a program underway to try to pimp the hotels to send people to them. And the question is, do you, if you're not getting any results from particular properties, do you stay at it or give up or what? And it seems to me you've also got a turnover factor in the hotels too.
Right. Well, the problem is that some of these people, I've seen every week for 3 months now, and I go through the program with them, and they nod, and yes, oh yeah, that's a great program, you have a great place, yada, 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 and then, I don't see any business from them.
Well, let me just throw an idea out, and I don't know if this is relevant or not, but it's sort of the way my mind works. If you show up, and obviously you're doing it because it works for you, but if you say, look, the only reason I'm going to give you something is because you're going to send something to me, then it's a conditional kind of a thing, and it doesn't ring as well. And if you do it because you say, look, I'm a good neighbor, I've got a great restaurant, and I want to make sure that you remember that, and you're really doing it for them. I mean, if you could make the distinction between what you do is exactly the same. It's kind of what your thought is as you do it. That may make a difference in terms of how people regard it.
So you're saying that I should give them the Circuit City boats before they send me?
No, I'm saying fine. Here's the program, but the truth of it is, you just keep the program up. I mean, they may feel it's like, here, let me make you. I'm going to make you this deal because of all the good you can do for me. And people aren't in it for what they can do for you. They're in it for what's in it for them. And so, and even though you've got something going that gives a benefit back to them, if they feel that the only reason you're approaching them is for what they can do for you, it doesn't ring quite as sincere.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
I know what I'm trying to say. I'm not sure.
I know it is, and as you're saying that, I'm just thinking to myself, when I'm making these presentations and when I'm talking to these people. Am I coming across as that, or am I coming across as, hey, here's a win-win program?
Well, just something to be aware of. What do you, Rufus? Do you do anything with that in terms of? You got a ton of property down there.
We've got a lot of hotel rooms around us, and I tell you what, they are a huge help. What we've done is just we go out and give certificates to the managers that are on the front desk. We give them also some like a business card, my business card or Roxy's or whatever, and you write on the back of it 50% discount for an entree. You might just come in, you go in and say hi, how you doing, and you just give them a card and it says free dessert. And what we've tried to do too is market to see where it's coming from, but the main thing is just to try to get out and see the people and kind of get a one-on-one so they know you and you know them, and when they come in, you can speak to them and carry on.
Is this 50% free dessert thing, is that for them to use or for them to give their hotel clients to use?
Well, it could be I give it to them. It's
right.
For them to use. If they want to give it away to somebody else, that's their prerogative.
Just got somebody else in, I think.
Hello?
Hi there. Who's this?
Oh, hello.
Yeah.
Hi, this is David at the Scargo Cafe on Cape Cod.
Oh, great. Hey, David. How you doing?
Hi, David.
We're on with Hap Gray and Edmund Wu, who I think you guys have chatted
with.
David,
before. How you doing, sir?
Very well.
And Rufus Pritchard from Nagstad, North Carolina.
Oh, okay. Covering the gamut here.
We're sort of talking about the topic the topic of the moment, which is what's going on business-wise and economically, and what are you doing about it?
For us, we haven't seen a dramatic impact, but
good for you.
It just may be the demographics that we have. So I know, like
Well, of course, you got out at the end. You know, you're pretty much through season. So that
right, exactly. What we have left now, as far as are a lot of second homeowners, and it's not going to stop them from coming down from the city to come to their waterfront properties.
Mm-hmm.
They're still going to travel.
Now, where are you located?
Cape Cod, Massachusetts.
Oh, I see.
Because Rufus, you said you were up, or at least not down. Is that?
We've had a fantastic September, in spite of everything. I mean, it seems like people feel very secure coming to our area because we're so desolate anyway, you know.
Right.
So, and of course, this is time of year that we see all the homeowners as well, and of course the empty nesters are here, and then again the people with the very young children.
Now,
and another thing that I have seen that I had not seen much of before is the this year-round school deal. I don't know if any of y'all are familiar with that or not, but they go for like 9 weeks and they're off for 3 weeks. And I have just started seeing some of that activity. That's kind of interesting.
You mean vacationing between these times?
Yes.
Huh.
Yes.
Interesting. Sounds like the marketing vice president is active today. And
yeah.
I assume that's on your end of this.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
This is it. She's trying to listen in and give her input.
Okay. Well, anyway, you know, you've got HAP guys for whatever questions you may have for them. So I don't want to, you know, we sort of got off on the economic issue, and we can certainly stay with that, or whatever's on your mind, please. Please
well,
go for
I'll start in on something here, Bill. Hap, you know, I think you may have said this, that the only difference between my restaurant and somebody else's restaurant is the training that I give them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting your tape talking about the type of training that you try to do. And I was telling Bill about, you know, putting a prospective waitress in the dish room.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great idea. I just find it sometimes that's kind of, and we do try to put them like in the kitchen in an expediter position,
right,
that would not kind of get in the way. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I told Bill, I said, good land, if you put a little 18-year-old girl in our dish room with these guys that are, they're on a roll, and they got to keep that dish machine working all the time. And if you get in their way, they just might run right over you. But I'd just like to hear you tell me a little bit more about the training aspect of a prospective waitress when they come in. I mean, some of your ideas were really good, I thought.
Well, I think you know it. We put them in there, and they sweat and come in, you know, jeans and a T-shirt, and their hair looks a mess when they're done, and they've experienced, you know, a volume and getting dirty and what they do, but it also orients them to, it's the first shift, so it really orients them to the whole kitchen because, as you know, dishwashers go everywhere putting away dirt, clean items, so you learn where everything goes in the kitchen pretty much.
Yeah,
and I just think that when you have whether it's 18 or 28 young ladies that are particularly good-looking and like to use that in the kitchen and try to take advantage of their good looks and so on, I think it's a healthy situation to break some of that down and let them sweat a little bit back there and really work. It gains an awful lot of respect for everybody in the kitchen who works so hard and loses their temper every once in a while because a stupid waitress says something, you know, inappropriate.
Yeah.
And this takes away a lot of that. And it's one shift. It's a lunch or dinner shift. It's, you know, probably a 4 or 5 hour shift from the beginning of it to the end. And we've found it very good. And we've never had a 16-year-old to probably 60-year-old not do it. And our hostesses do it, our bartenders do it, everybody in front of the house goes through it, including the bussers.
Uh-huh. Well, I think it's a good thing, too, for diversification. You might find somebody that could help you get through a shift, you know, instead of
Absolutely.
Waiting tables, they could help you in the kitchen doing something when you were shorthanded.
It's called cross-training, and you're never, that's never something bad.
That's exactly right.
No,
Cap, talking about that service, your server training type of thing, do you have, would it be possible to take a look at your training manual? You have that on disk or something that would be possible?
No, it's not on disk. We at one point were looking at trying to get it on a laptop and do, you know, more self-training sorts of things, and we have not been able to accomplish that. So it's a printed material. It is on word processing. I would have to check on that and see if we could get you something like that.
Yeah, I'd love to take a look at it.
Yeah. And it's mostly general information you're going to find in anybody's manual. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't think ours is any better or worse than anybody else's. It's, if you give a manual to a server and you say, read it, it's not going to happen. I mean, most of our training is done through the process of one-on-one with a training server or with a hostess or with a busser, you know, the pride that they have in their job and showing a new person how to do it. And managers watching over them saying, you know, this is how you can improve what you're doing. The manuals, you know, they tend to be put on somebody's shelf and maybe read once and maybe they're understood and maybe they're not. You know, through some testing you can find out if they've got the basic knowledge, but for most of us I think it's a one-on-one training is the most effective in meetings where you're role-playing things.
Yeah, I think the major benefit of manuals is just that it clears, you can think fuzzy, but you can't write fuzzy.
Yes.
So if you want to sit down and write it, but it's primarily for your benefit and clarifying your thinking rather than...
It's a standard you can always go to.
But I mean, I think that's the key word, Hap, is that you're better off with standards than a lot of procedures.
Yes.
Say, this is the standard that we work to. Here's timing standards, here's quality standards, here's service standards. This is the result we have to get. And don't get too particular about how they get it. Because if
yes.
they get it, why? What do you care?
Yes. I think another thing we do that's fairly good is that we have them sign, when they become an employee, a sheet that sets up standards for them as far as conduct goes. What constitutes them being fired, you know, for instance, if they drink on the job or use drugs or get in a fight or something like that. There are certain things that are automatic termination things, other things, holiday policy. If you don't show up for a holiday shift, you're automatically gone. And they sign this and it goes into their file. So we know they've seen the standards which they'll be held to for most of the disciplinary action things that we've been involved in typically. And I think that's very helpful in having a good relationship with the employees because, you know, you're going to fire me. You didn't even tell me that was a policy sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't
okay.
want that.
Along a different line, recently the last couple of hires I've made have been a little bit older. These are people in between their 20, you know, between 25 and 30. Well, actually, I just hired a guy that's in his actually early 40s. And part of the reason I've been doing that is that, you know, we're trying for a higher level of personal connection in our servers. You know, the abilities to get someone to be confident to ask someone their name, to use their name, and just a lot of really more, you know, managing the table, you know, re-bev-napping the table, just a lot of high-touch stuff. And usually when I hire a 19, 20, 21-year-old person, they frankly don't have the confidence nor the maturity to you know, it's a very basic thing to get and use people's names. And frankly, I need another two or three servers, but the only people who are walking through my doors right now are 19, 20, 21-year-old kids. While, yeah, and I know they'll be real good at turning and burning, they'll be real good at executing every step of service, but for that personal connection, the 21-year-old guys I got right now, I can't get them to the table to do that kind of thing. What are some of your guys' thoughts on that?
I think that without a question, if you start getting into a little older person, you're going to have much better luck. Our steady crew through the winter, probably average age of servers is probably 40 or above. We have some, servers that are over 50 now. And they don't look 50. They look good, but they. I think that
you can look good over 50. Yeah, come on.
our industry is that's what's going to happen to it. And you're going to have to deal with people longer term, and hopefully we as an industry can keep people in it, not just as a 19, 20-year-old that's trying to earn college money, but somebody who sees it as his career. I mean, my servers, for the most part, except for in the summer, are definitely career people. And that's what you want, somebody who's going to be serious about what they're doing and care that customer comes back.
What's the average age of your service staff now?
You talking to me, Bill?
Yeah.
Prior to me taking this restaurant back over and running it myself, 2 years ago, the average age of my staff was probably between 24 and 30. Over the last couple of years where I haven't been there and have people moved on, and we promoted from within, food runners, server assistants, so forth, so on, the staff has gotten younger and younger. So the average age right now is probably 21, 22.
That may be part of the reason that you're not getting, that you're not having as good a luck with that. With that group,
right? I mean,
with that older group.
No matter how much I coach about it, no matter how much it's in their pre-shifts, in their employee newsletters, one-on-one, what I find that, and I'm on that floor, every minute that we're open, unless I'm standing beside them, I'm having a hard time getting them to use those names. I have to come back and say, okay, Sean, what's the people's name on 51? How come you didn't use it? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
What's your situation on that, Dan? Or David? Who do we have on?
You mean as far as age range?
Yeah.
Like many of the others, I've got very, very low turnover. Like HAP, because of the seasonality, we utilize a fair number of students as well as teachers in the summer, but the year-round crew is 35 to 40 on average. So, we've got a pretty good retention rate. One of the things I'm finding is in the past year and a half, we've actually lost a certain number who've moved into, decided that they were just getting too old for the profession, the physicality of it, and have moved on to more 9-to-5 day type jobs.
Mm.
But in fact, normally this time of year, I'd only have 12 wait staff. I've got 18, and that's because so many of them have all gone part time. They just can't do a full week of it. But
how's that working for you?
Well, it's tough because we keep thinking that we've got more staff than we could possibly need because we go to fill out a schedule and there's certain shifts we just can't cover. If they're all teachers or they're all doing 9-to-5 Monday through Friday, it's awful hard to cover those lunch shifts.
Mm, yeah.
But so we go out and we hire yet another one. And
and there are hidden costs in that. Your state unemployment goes up because you're. You have to meet that $7,000 or whatever it is per every new employee,
yeah.
And so forth, so on.
I'd like to go back to the one thing that you were talking about, the names and the use of the customer's name. There are lots of people that like that and think that's important in our industry. I'm not one of them. I mean, I've never emphasized that. I don't really believe in it. I don't really like it that much. I think it's important that they know that they're regulars, and quite frankly, they should take care of every customer just like they're a regular. And it happens that they learn names, and names are good, but I don't think it's something I care to emphasize because there are so many other details of service and knowledge of the product and wines and so on that I think are more important. It wouldn't become a big deal. It isn't a big deal for us and what we do. But that's my personal opinion.
I think that's sort of a... an associated issue would be the idea of attaching too much importance with not customer recognition as much as recognition of the people that are, I find myself trying to extract myself from working the floor, and yet there's this cult of personality, and a certain amount of my customer base come here because they know the owner, and they want to see me on the floor, and yet the more I extract myself, the more the less they get to see me, the less they get what they want. In some ways, trying to cultivate the idea of having them recognize is almost going in the opposite direction, because then they become you become reliant on that cult personality, if you will.
Right, which is why I've tried to push the name thing, which is, that they are recognized whether I'm on the floor or not.
Right.
You know, sort of that kind of idea. And somebody that truly comes into your restaurant, you know, we have a $25, $30 check average. I have some people that come in, you know, every weekend for the last eight or 10 weeks, and I've been on the floor. Well, man, if I don't and my staff doesn't know their names, goodness gracious.
Right. Well, you know, one of the things that we did for a while is they say we're slowly moving, trying to move ourselves off the floor, and we knew that there was a definite feel among some of the regular customers that they weren't seeing us anymore. And, of course, with new staff coming in, they don't necessarily know who the regulars are. Is we got in the habit of taking an Instamatic picture, a little Polaroid picture of our regulars, and putting a little bulletin board in the back in the kitchen, attaching a little note to it as to what their favorite drinks, what they tended to order the most, what their names were, any information we could. And that seemed to help bring a lot of people up to speed.
Yeah, good idea.
Do you quiz them on that? Is there...
No, it's not. It's really just a reference tool for people that if the waitstaff would like to make use of it, it really helps.
Okay, we get somebody else on or somebody just get off?
Hello?
Okay, anyway. Keep going.
Well, you know, we started to talk a little bit about talking about hiring students and teachers. I know, Hap, you were doing that to some degree.
I think
you find yourself with any difficulty in terms of them leaving too soon at the season?
Absolutely. I mean, what we try to do is get some from universities that start early and end up early, and others that start late and end up late.
Right.
It's the only thing you can do.
Yeah, we pretty much try to cultivate the colleges that start late.
Yep.
That and a certain amount of European.
Yes, that has become more and more. We had a whole group of Czechoslovakian students in busing this year that I never thought we'd have anything like that. And we have a whole group of them that were with us for the entire summer, did a great job.
Yep.
Here we are. We're an inner city property that they claim, youthful, minority unemployment is 70% or something like that,
wow.
And yet we can't get them to come in and act like responsible human beings and hire them, put them to work. We're hiring people from Czechoslovakia. Isn't that amazing?
Well, let me ask you this. You're hiring the Eastern European, but what about housing? Is it up to them to find their own housing?
We try to help them get acclimated and get in and get housing, but... basically, they're on their own.
We were involved with the BUNAC program this year. This is the first time I'd ever done it. And the big stumbling block was that we had to say, okay, we've got a job for them, and we have a place for them to live. Now, they would pay rent in the place that you have, but you have to confirm that they have a place to live when they get here.
Right.
And we just couldn't have made it if we hadn't had these people from England and the Czech Republic and Bulgaria. And
what was the name of this program again?
It was called BUNAC. That's British University, and I can't remember the rest of it, but it's BUNAC, and you can find it on the web. But they sent me a little description, and I said, we're the Dunes in in Nag's Head, and we're so far from the ocean, and we have theaters, and you have a food line near us, and then they'd ask you what kind of jobs you had available, and we just, you know, told them what we were looking for, and they actually put that in a directory, which got sent out all over Europe, I assume. And so the kids over there pick it up and say, well, I want to go to California, or I want to go to Cape Cod, or wherever, and they pick out their spot, and then they start looking for what's available, and that's how we got them. So they come to you through the Internet.
Pretty amazing.
It is totally amazing. I mean, I was very unsure of whether I wanted to get in this or not, but I have a friend who has a retail store. He's been doing it for 5 years, and he's been telling me that this is the way to go.
Do you market rates, or do you get anything, credits or stuff?
No, I paid them the normal amount that I would pay a cashier.
We did, too.
But the thing that helped me so much is my college kids all leave. I had them leaving from the 30th of July was the first one that left. And, you know, we're resort area. We're jammed all the way through August. So these kids that stayed through the mid-September and stayed until we just lost the last one, they could not work past September the 30th.
And you're using these people for bussers, server assistants, that type of thing, cashiers?
They were all over the restaurant. They were bussing, they were cooking, they were expediting, they were waiting tables. I mainly got into it because I have such a time with cashiers. We had running three shifts a day. It takes a lot of cashiers and hostesses, and I mainly got into it trying to get cashiers. But when they got in the restaurant, there were so many things that they could do and wanted to do. Their work ethic was really good.
Yes,
I mean, I was just blessed with and we had about 15. So we were just really blessed with a good group, and they worked well, and they were trying to learn. And it's amazing, too, to get into somebody else's culture. This one kid from Bulgaria that ended up waiting tables for us, started out busing, and his English was such that we felt comfortable putting him on the floor to wait tables. But his father is a doctor in Bulgaria. His father makes $80 a month because he gets paid by the government. $80 a month. And this kid was making $120 a night. So he was like, wow.
America.
But it worked out good for us.
America, I love it, right?
Yeah.
What are some of the marketing programs that your restaurant has been most successful with, be it direct mail or – you talked a little bit about the hotel thing. This is sort of jumping off, you know, to another subject. But I wanted to kind of touch on that before we run out of time.
Well, I think the best things are public relations things. And, again, we are in a little different market than you are. The best things that we do are things that we get caught doing something good on the media. That may be a festival sort of thing, or somebody special that's coming to the restaurant, or somehow involving yourself in the community. They get tremendous, from newspaper to television to radio coverage, and those kinds of things I don't think you can buy. You influence the public to say you're the center of activity in your area and you do good things and you're a nice place to be. Getting those accomplished in your areas where you may not be the center of the media may not be the most appropriate things you do. I think the hotels are probably something all of us are agreed on that's necessary, because it's people that are out spending money every night and every lunch, every breakfast. They're out there taking money out of their pockets. If you're near an area where there are business people, they're even better, obviously. The company is paying, and they're entertaining people, and they're trying to put on the dog, and they're willing to do something in a better place. Spend more money. They tip better. They want better service. They want better wine. But it really depends upon where you are and who you see as your market. And, you know, some of you are not in the same situation that I'm in. So I find it hard saying what's the most effective for you guys. Again, our most effective thing, I think, is really PR. But we spend a ton of money on advertising. direct advertising. Very little of it in the typical places, but more in the hotels. You know, everything in the hotels, we've had our name and picture on, so that we are in the front of the people that stay in the hotels. Locally, we depend upon more the direct mail and the PR.
What type of direct mail? These marriage mail things?
God, we've tried just about everything over the 15 years we've been open. And, you know, they are so hard to really appraise how successful they are that I wouldn't even begin to tell you. No, newsletters are nice. Couponing is something. We have tried all kinds of things. To measure them and really tell the value of advertising or PR or a direct mail is extremely hard to do. We've tried to concentrate one of the things on making a good list, and I mentioned that on tape, that we take our mailing list from our reservations and the phone numbers on the reservations using a thing called Phone Disk, which every quarter they send us new updated phone book for the United States, basically. But with the new thing that we're trying, that my son is running the restaurant now, and he's much more, computer-oriented than I am, and now they're trying to put together an email listing, and they're going to try to just start doing promotions and couponing and so on through email distribution, which is probably makes a great deal of sense. Most of the people that we would be dealing in an upscale restaurant or a business situation, you know, have email, use the email, and would probably be effective. We haven't started that yet. We're just starting to collect the email addresses at this point. And we think also that it'll be a very inexpensive way of distributing information and coupons, because the cost of doing a mailing today, as you probably all know, is very expensive per unit, and therefore, in the overall scheme of things.
Yeah, as long as you get permission from people to before you start sending them email, you should be okay.
Yeah, well, this is in customers at the restaurant. We're soliciting, birthday anniversary dates as well as email address and trying to get them to tick off what types of things they're interested in, wine dinners, special promotions, summer boat cruises, whatever. It's an implied consent at that point, I guess.
Well, I know somebody in Oregon who's doing that in a little different way, but, when people sign up for his mailing list, he does the survey, what are you interested in? He's getting 40% response on some mailings that he does. Because when he's doing a winemaker dinner, it only goes to people that say they're interested in winemaker dinners.
Sure. It's a tremendously cumbersome thing to keep up over long periods of time, I can tell you that. Although computers make it possible today without a question. I don't have any bright ideas. I think obviously the best things any of us can do is serve good food with good service and clean and interesting atmospheres. When you do that, you've got a shot at maintaining the business for a long period of time.
What, Lloyd, you said that you had had some pretty serious drop-off because the hotels had a drop-off. Do you have anything in mind at the moment to try to backfill that?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
And given that the hotels are down, is that triggering anything else, or
no?
Just going to ride it out?
We've experimented during January and February, which is our worst times, to try to bring business in. We've done huge radio campaigns and special promotions and mailings and all kinds of things. And truthfully, we find that we can up the business, but by the time you look at the expenses and so on, of putting them, our bottom line doesn't improve at all. So right now, we just don't think there's much we can do to really influence people beyond what we're really already doing.
Are you making any adjustments in the operation itself?
Oh, you bet. Slashing. You have to when you're down 30%.
Mm-hmm.
So you do what you got to do to survive to come out the other side. Hopefully we've done enough.
Yeah, we had some idea when the other side was.
Yes, in this case we don't know.
Well, and I gotta believe that there's going to be some other incidents.
I do too.
I mean, if there's something else has got to happen.
Yes, I think it's more than one. If there are truly thousands of people around that are in this country and all over the world, they're willing to give up their lives for this cause, it will certainly continue to happen. It's a question of when.
Any of the rest of you made any adjustments? You said you were holding up pretty well, though.
Bill, we're fortunate to be in the area that we're in. You know, on the coast, and people still want to come, and they feel secure down here. We're just lucky, right this minute. But the way you're talking, you know, you never know what's going to happen next.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they may be right, Nick. That probably is not a major terrorism target.
Well, 90 miles north of us would be.
Yeah.
In Norfolk, Virginia, with the shipbuilding and shipyards and the naval bases and all that. So you don't know if something happens there, what would happen here. And
well, I think there's still maybe this whole tendency to travel domestic rather than travel overseas. And some of that may help, our resort areas in the United States. Now, I'm not a resort area. I'm a seasonal business, but I'm a downtown property. It depends upon conferences and meetings and some tourism. But you don't think of Cleveland, Ohio as a tourism destination, obviously. So that's, you know, just it may be just in different properties for different things. In a way, it's luck, but luck has a lot to do with whether we really succeed or not.
Have you heard of the Visitor and Convention Bureau or the Chamber of Commerce or anything talking about doing anything to try to promote travel to Cleveland as you know from the Ohio market rather than you know people who would otherwise get on a plane to go to London. You know, if you want to stay in the country, there's great stuff here.
Well, I don't think they've done anything immediately to do that based on this last thing that happened. But they've been very active in other cities trying to get people from the circle around us, the one-day drive, Pittsburgh, Detroit, Cincinnati, you know, sort of area to come to Cleveland and visit the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the things that we do have to bring people in. And they've been, you know, somewhat successful at that, but not as good as we need right at this moment.
Guys, I got to get going to roll run a shift. It's been my pleasure to talk to you, Hap.
It's been fun.
All right, Bill.
Great. Thanks for
thanks for
checking in, Buzz.
All right. Good talking to you, Rufus.
You
I'll talk to you sometime soon.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Hap, Bill, I got to run, too. My phone is giving out on me.
Okay.
And I'm rolling.
Okay.
Good to talk to you, Hap.
Thank
good
you.
To hear
good
your voice.
To you.
I enjoyed
Thank
it.
Bye-bye.
David, you still around or are you gone, too?
I'm still here.
Okay.
I did have one quick question for Hap. I noticed we were looking at his website a little earlier, and you got your menu on there, and yet you've got an award-winning wine list, and I didn't see the wine list.
Interesting. Good point. Good point.
Guys, don't miss a thing.
We should dump that on there.
Well, I enjoy wines myself, so I was curious to see what was there, so I was disappointed when I couldn't find it.
Yeah, I thought it was on there. I will check on that and see what's going on with it. But, the wine list has been successful for us. And, you know, we've never had the huge storage area to get into the 1,000, to take it up to the next step for the wine spec durder and really become that type of restaurant that's known for the 1,000 bottle or the 1,000 different brand sort of thing. But and our 100 forces our managers to, you know, the person in charge of the wine list to keep it contained rather than getting out of control the number of things that we have.
Right.
That's been a good control for us.
The one other thing I wanted to touch on, which we did a little bit earlier, we talked about training pay and the extensive, the rigors that you put everyone through. I think that's tremendous, but I never heard a real dollar figure. I'm curious, what does it take to pay someone, and have you ever gotten anyone who said, gee, I just don't have that much time to train. I really need to get on the floor right away.
We've never had anybody do that, to my knowledge. We pay them minimum wage, you know, not tipped wages, but
right.
Minimum wage.
Wow. And minimum in Ohio is what?
I don't know, whatever it is, five, whatever.
I think Massachusetts is a bit high. We're already in the six plus, but that even with that, I'm just hard-pressed sometimes to get anybody to spend more than two nights training. As much as I love to, with some of our seasonal staff, we'll come in, make them hostess and bus, but I think if we really put them on a full week's rotation of kitchen duty, I know for a fact that we'd have a few people who say, you know, I just don't have that much time. And I'm, you know, certainly if someone hasn't got a week for training, then they're probably not someone I want anyways, but with the pickings being so slim, you sometimes don't demand quite as much from them.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. You know, you have to do what you got to do to run your operation. I can only tell you we've done that ever since we've opened, and we've been successful with it. And, you know, quite frankly, I really don't know what other quality restaurants in the city are doing, but we've never had anybody, you know, not do this. I have one exception to that. It was a very kind of bizarre case where I had a lawyer who was actually a lawyer who worked in the court system of Cleveland, and he was looking to pick up some part-time money and be a post-maitre d' sort of guy for us. And he was going through the training process, and he got all the way through the kitchen, no problem. And he got out onto the floor, and his first shift was going to be as a busser. And we gave him his, he came in in his white shirt and his tie, and we gave him his vest to go out on the floor to train as a busser. And he came back and he said, I can't do this. There are some lawyers out on the floor having dinner that I know. And I can't go out there being a busser. I'll never live it down, or whatever his rationale was. And we told him, you have to do it, or you can't work here. He turned over his vest and left.
Wow.
But it's the only incident we've ever had. It had nothing to do with time or money. It had to do with his own ego and his relationship with his peers.
Right.
Which was very strange to me, but, you know, you do what you got to do. But we didn't hesitate. If you let the exception go for one person, then nobody will want to do it.
Right. I agree. I think it's a matter of getting it started and sticking with it.
Right.
I think, as you said, you did it right from the beginning, and in some ways that's the obstacle to overcome, is getting people in and just enforcing the issue and saying, you know, this is the criteria that it takes to work here.
This is the way we do it, no matter what. And we have some things, you know, I wish we were open for Thanksgiving. I think it'd be good for our Novembers or not great. It'd be a great holiday. It's a natural for us. We do some buffets and stuff. And I can't do it. And then I would have rebellion.
Yeah.
It's one of the holidays I've let them off for traditionally. Now I'd like to change it. Well, I can't change it.
Right.
You know, it's why so much in the beginning when you open a restaurant, you set up policies and procedures and stuff, and boy, changing it is sometimes very, very hard.
I do it on day one, you're fine. I try to change it on day two, it's a mess.
Yeah.
Well,
it's amazing.
We found that the expectation changes with us even seasonally, that we're very elastic in our job descriptions, and that the peak of the season, the summer, where people have a very limited defined role and a lot of support staff. And then as we get in deeper into the off season, that support staff disappears, and you find instead of having a salad person, the cooks sort of absorb that, or the wait staff have to absorb some of that, and they
sure.
start making their own desserts and their own bus person. And it's interesting to see who's hired at what time of year and what their expectation is. There's no doubt come fall they're so used to having all the support, there are some who just don't see it as their job to do some of those things.
Right. And we experience that absolutely true also, that you know, you don't really get to feel what we're all about until you've made it through 1 year's cycle of the restaurant. But you're right, you have to do different things in the off season to make the facilities go oftentimes. It's a challenging business. It always has been and always will be.
Terrific. Well, we're kind of getting down to the amount of time, at least you kind of agreed to in the beginning, so I don't want to...
Well, appreciate your time. Thank
I don't
want
to take advantage. You got anything else that's sort of hanging that we ought to cover before we wrap this up?
I think we covered the four or five things that I took from the CD that piqued my interest.
Great. I think you liked the one this month. Had a great discussion the other day with Lorette Carbone, who used to be the Rich Melman's HR person, and is now the president of Flat Top Grill in Chicago. And tomorrow I'm going to talk with Stan Clark, who owns Eskimo Joe's in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Started off as a little beer bar, and I mean, their whole clothing thing now has gone to the point that they've got a four-color, I think about a 32-page four-color catalog that comes out three or four times a year now and goes out to thousands and thousands of people. I think they make more money with the catalog than they do with the restaurant. Anyway, just some different things, and you'll be on the list for that stuff too, Hass. So.
Great. Appreciate it.
Terrific. Well, thank you all for your time
and
for being part of this game. And
enjoyed it.
I'll, if you want, we'll take whatever our discussions are today, and those will be on the website within a matter of minutes.
Great. Fantastic.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Take
care.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.